Welcome back. In this lesson, we're exploring evaluating solutions, risks, and outcomes. If you've watched the overview, this will build on that. If not, you'll still be able to follow along. Now, let's go further by exploring practical examples, future workplace relevance, responsible use, and how you can build confidence with this skill.
Yeah, and I think it's just so vital we spend time here. Because there is this pervasive, almost invisible trap in modern work and digital life that we all fall into.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? We have this tendency to confuse the finish line of a project with the actual outcome. Like, you publish on a website, you deploy a new workflow, or you submit a major assignment, and your brain just delivers this massive hit of dopamine.
You feel like the work is totally done.
Exactly. You get that rush. But launching a solution without rigorously evaluating the aftermath means you are, essentially flying blind into the future.
Right.
You risk codifying highly ineffective strategies into your daily routine. You institutionalize critical risks, and you just end up repeating the same avoidable mistakes simply because you never actually checked to see what happened after you press send.
It reminds me of the bizarre reality of baking an incredibly elaborate three-tiered cake. Like, spending hours meticulously measuring ingredients, perfecting the frosting, and then serving it at a massive gathering without ever tasting a single slice yourself?
Yes, that is a perfect way to look at it.
You know, you might look at the empty plates at the end of the night and assume, oh, it was a hit, but did they eat it because it was delicious or just because they were starving?
Right, or did you accidentally swap the sugar for salt?
Exactly. Is the sponge completely dried out? Mm-hmm. Without taking that bite, without that critical mechanism of evaluation, you have zero functional data. You don't know the actual impact of your work, and you possess no real information on how to adjust the recipe for the next event.
And that gap between the output, the baked cake and the outcome, how it actually tastes and impacts the guests, that is exactly where evaluation lives.
Makes sense.
To close that gap, we essentially rely on three structural pillars. The first is solution evaluation, which is just the direct measurement of efficacy. Did this intervention actually solve the specific problem it was engineered to address?
Right. Did it do what it was supposed to do?
Exactly. Then the second pillar is risk awareness, because implementing any new system introduces friction somewhere else.
Yeah.
Right? We have to map out the trade-offs.
Yeah.
And the final pillar is continuous improvement, which is the process of taking the raw data from those first two pillars and feeding it back into your operational framework to refine the next iteration.
Okay, let's unpack this, because
yeah.
I want to examine that friction, especially regarding that second pillar, risk awareness.
Sure.
If I put myself in the position of a young professional stepping into a heavily digitally enabled industry today, the overriding cultural mantra for the last 10 years has basically been move fast and break things.
Oh, absolutely. Speed is everything.
Right. Speed is treated as the ultimate metric of productivity. So if a team is stopping to rigorously map out risk awareness and continuously evaluate every single deliverable, doesn't that inherently slow down the development cycle?
I mean, it definitely feels that way.
Yeah, it feels like an academic luxury in an environment that demands constant shipping.
It seems like a luxury until you understand the mechanics of what we call process debt.
Process debt.
Yeah. When you move fast without evaluating, you aren't actually moving fast, You're just thrashing. Every time you implement a flawed solution and fail to catch the negative trade-offs, you build a layer of inefficiency into your workflow.
And I imagine that adds up.
It compounds.
Yeah.
We talk a lot about the principles of systems thinking, this idea that you can't just change one node in a network without affecting the whole structure. If you push a hyper-fast solution that quietly breaks the communication pipeline between two departments, the time you quote-unquote saved by not evaluating will be entirely eclipsed by the weeks you spend untangling the resulting chaos down the line.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that puts it into perspective.
Taking an hour on a Friday to evaluate an outcome isn't a delay. It's a structural reinforcement. It builds adaptability.
So you're basically preventing the compounding interests of bad decisions.
Exactly.
That shift in perspective is super helpful, but we also have to translate that theoretical reflection into the actual digital workspaces where people live, right?
Right. The day-to-day.
Because modern professionals are operating inside complex digital ecosystems, project management software, collaborative whiteboards, asynchronous communication platforms. How do we build this evaluation muscle into those specific tools without creating an entirely separate, really tedious administrative task?
Well, the secret is not adding new tools to your stack, but changing the function of the ones you already use.
Okay, how so?
Right now, collaborative platforms like Notion, Miro, and Trello are ubiquitous. Mm. The limitation is that most teams treat them exclusively as forward-facing deployment mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically engines for planning what needs to be done.
Yeah, that's how I use them.
The shift happens when you also utilize them as retrospective data repositories.
Oh, like repurposing a Kanban board.
Yes, exactly.
Because most of us are used to the standard flow, right? Cards move from to do to doing and finally to done. And the moment a card hits done, it essentially ceases to exist. We just archive it and clear the board.
Oh, yeah, it vanishes.
But if we want to capture that retrospective data, the done column shouldn't be a graveyard. It should be the staging ground for a postmortem. Like after a sprint, the team looks at everything and done and categorizes those cards based on the outcome.
Yeah.
Did this feature deploy smoothly? Did this specific task cause a bottleneck?
You capture the why behind the outcome. You know, you can set up relational databases in Notion where every completed project is tagged not just by the date it was finished, but by the friction it caused or the unexpected benefit it generated.
That's brilliant.
And if you use Miro, you don't just use it to brainstorm the launch. You return to that exact same whiteboard weeks later to map the actual user feedback against your original hypothesis. You're basically constructing a digital archive of continuous improvement.
So the next time you face a similar problem, you have historical data, not just intuition, guiding your strategy.
Precisely.
Let's contextualize this with a scenario to see how those mechanics play out under pressure. Put us in a future-facing workspace where these concepts are actively clashing with daily operations.
Okay, imagine an operations manager who is hired to streamline a rapidly scaling remote team.
All right, I can picture that.
The manager observes a major inefficiency. The team is losing hours every single day, manually triaging a massive influx of client emails. So to solve this, the manager designs and deploys an automated AI-assisted ticketing workflow.
Sounds like a solid solution.
Right. The system scans the emails, categorizes the requests, and routes them to the appropriate department. Now, under a non-evaluative framework, the manager turns the system on, notes the immediate drop in manual sorting time, claims a massive victory, and just moves on to the next project.
The output was achieved. The cake was served.
Exactly. But an evaluative framework demands we look at the outcome. So the manager schedules an evaluation review for 2 weeks post-launch.
And what do they find?
They pull the data and uncover a significant, completely hidden trade-off.
Oh.
Yes, the internal team's triage time dropped to near zero. However, client satisfaction scores are plummeting and resolution times for complex issues have doubled.
Oh no, why?
Well, by digging into the system's mechanics, they realize the automated tags are just too rigid. Human communication is infinitely messy and nuanced, you know. But the routing algorithm forces every single email into a finite set of rigid categories.
So nuanced requests are just getting misrouted.
Bouncing between departments and endlessly frustrating the clients. The risk they failed to anticipate, the loss of nuance, has basically become an operational bottleneck.
Here's where it gets really interesting. In a traditional, rigid corporate culture, that discovery triggers immediate defensiveness.
Oh, for sure.
The manager might blame the clients for not using the system correctly, or quietly try to hide the satisfaction metrics because the bottleneck feels like a personal, professional failure.
Which is the worst thing you can do.
Right. But within the framework of the lean methodologies we are exploring, that friction is the entire point of the exercise. The methodology relies on a build, measure, learn feedback loop.
Yeah.
The initial system wasn't a failure. It was the build phase required to generate the real-world data for the measure phase.
Exactly. The professional in this scenario leverages that data to pivot. Instead of abandoning the system or defending a broken process, they adjust the architecture. They might introduce a hybrid routing system where specific keywords trigger a human review, or they create a dynamic custom request pathway.
Yeah.
By identifying the unintended consequence through structured evaluation and immediately refining the solution, they don't just fix the problem.
They demonstrate deep operational accountability to their leadership.
Precisely. They prove they can adapt.
That concept of unintended consequences leads directly into a much heavier operational reality, though.
It does.
Because when we're tweaking a personal productivity system, a blind spot just costs us our own afternoon. Mm. But as technology scales, the radius of impact expands exponentially. We are deploying digital solutions that manage finances, screen medical records, filter information for millions of people.
And the velocity of digital scaling means that a minor flaw in your logic, once it's automated, executes the wrong decision at a million times the speed.
Right.
This is really where the ethical deployment of technology is inextricably linked to continuous evaluation. Consider the automated algorithms companies use to screen tens of thousands of resumes.
Oh, this is a huge topic right now.
A team builds an algorithm designed to optimize for successful candidates by training the software on the historical data of the company's past top performers.
But historical data is just a record of past human decisions, which inherently carry past human biases.
Exactly.
So if the company historically overlooked certain demographics, the algorithm isn't just going to learn the objective qualifications. It's going to learn and encode those historical blind spots.
And because it is a machine, it applies that bias with terrifying efficiency. If the engineering team only measures the output, which is that resumes are sorted instantly, they will view the solution as a massive success.
Wow.
But if they fail to rigorously evaluate the outcome by auditing the demographics of the filtered candidates against the broader applicant pool, they won't realize their efficiency tool is operating as an engine for systematic discrimination.
That's chilling.
Responsible technology use is not just about having good intentions during the design phase. It requires the active, continuous mapping of trade-offs and unintended consequences during deployment.
Okay, I want to challenge the expectation of mapping unintended consequences, though.
Right.
Because it can sound like we are demanding clairvoyance.
All right.
By definition, an unintended consequence is something the team couldn't predict. If a system is complex enough, the variables are just too numerous for any human mind to foresee every possible interaction. So how do we hold professionals accountable for risks they literally could not see coming?
It is a phenomenal question, and the answer is rooted in systems design, not psychic ability.
Okay.
Accountability does not mean predicting every single variable. Accountability means designing your implementation with embedded fail-safes and rapid feedback intervals.
Got it.
You don't release a global software update to 10 million users on day one and hope for the best. You release it to 1% of your users, and you actively hunt for the anomalies.
You look for the cracks.
Exactly. When the unpredictable inevitably happens, your evaluation mechanisms catch the error while it is still isolated. You are responsible for building the detection network, so that when a failure occurs, you are catching it at step 2 rather than at step 10,000 when the damage is systemic.
It's a difference between trying to predict the weather perfectly and simply making sure your house has a functioning smoke detector and a reinforced roof.
That's a great way to put it.
Let's bring this macro philosophy down to the micro level of personal development. If we want to build these feedback intervals into our own lives, what are the actual physiological mechanics of doing that? Because we have a fascinating case study in the materials about a student struggling with their revision process.
Yeah, this case study is so relatable. The student was caught in a very common loop correlating time spent with knowledge acquired.
We've all been there.
Right. They were putting in exhaustive hours rereading textbooks and highlighting passages, but their exam outcomes remained really poor. Now, the default human reaction when we fail is to apply more brute force, to just study for 6 hours instead of 4.
Just push harder.
Right. But instead of increasing their input, they paused to evaluate the mechanism of their studying.
Because they were suffering from the illusion of competence.
Yes.
When you reread a highlighted textbook, your brain recognizes the words. It feels familiar. So you trick yourself into believing you have actually mastered the concept. But recognition is a completely different neural pathway than retrieval.
Precisely. Through evaluation, the student identified that highlighting was a critical weakness in their system. It wasn't working.
So what did they do?
They pivoted to active recall, forcing the brain to retrieve the information without the textbook open, which physically strengthens the synaptic connections required for memory. They also integrated practice testing to simulate the actual environment of the exam. They didn't burn out by studying longer. They adjusted their method based on the data of their past failures. By isolating the friction point, they dramatically increased their academic yield.
This maps perfectly onto the philosophy of marginal gains. We often think continuous improvement requires these massive, dramatic overhauls of our lives.
Like a total reset.
Yeah, but in reality, it's about making a 1% adjustment to a daily routine based on a clear-eyed evaluation of yesterday's results. Over a year, those 1% adjustments compound into a totally unrecognizable level of mastery.
Absolutely.
But to start building that compounding interest today, we really need a functional framework.
And we can distill this entire philosophy down to a 4-part reflective sequence. It's really simple. It just requires looking at a single recent project, a completed task, or even a difficult conversation, and running it through 4 specific filters.
Okay, the first filter has to be establishing the baseline of what actually succeeded. Because we naturally fixate on the negative, right? But we need to quantify the strengths. What worked and why did it work?
Yes. Once you secure the baseline, the second filter is brutal honesty. What failed? Where did the system break down? Where did you lose time? Or where did the outcome completely diverge from the goal?
Then we move to the system's view for the third filter. What were the unintended consequences? Did solving problem A accidentally create problem B?
Right, like did our new workflow isolate a team member or drop our quality standard?
Exactly.
And the final filter synthesizes the previous three into action. What specific measurable adjustments will be implemented for the next iteration?
Because if you do not answer that fourth question, you aren't really evaluating. You're just complaining about the past.
So true. By answering it, you transform a historical event
yeah.
into a practical operational asset.
Yeah.
What worked? What failed? What were the hidden impacts? And how do we adjust? Writing those answers down, literally externalizing the data from your own head forces, a level of clarity that most of us actively avoid because we are just desperate to check the box and move to the next assignment.
We avoid it because it requires confronting our own inefficiencies.
Yeah.
But closing that loop is the singular mechanism that turns raw experience into actual expertise.
So what does this all mean? As we pull these threads together, the architecture of how we handle our digital futures becomes much clearer. We started by recognizing the danger of simply shipping a project and walking away.
Right.
We explored how continuous evaluation isn't a roadblock to speed, but rather the ultimate defense against compounding process debt. We looked at how repositioning our digital tools can turn task management into knowledge management.
That's a huge shift.
And most importantly, we examined the ethical necessity of catching unintended consequences early before our automated systems can scale our mistakes. This cycle of building, measuring, learning, and improving isn't just a corporate strategy. It is the fundamental physics of adaptability.
And adaptability is the metric that will dictate success in the modern workplace. To anchor this in your own life, I want to leave you with a specific practical provocation.
Let's hear it.
Look at the single biggest point of friction in your workflow right now. Are you stubbornly applying more brute force to a broken system, or are you willing to pause, evaluate the underlying mechanics, and change the strategy? How can evaluating outcomes help me become a better problem solver and decision maker? Your capacity to be a highly effective problem solver depends entirely on your willingness to look at the actual outcomes of your actions.
That is exactly the mindset we want you to carry forward. Stay intensely curious about how your systems actually function. Remain responsible for the ripples your digital tools create, and continuously build that future-ready adaptability. Take the time to review the end of module study guide, and please complete the workbook activities they are engineered to transition these frameworks from abstract concepts into concrete daily habits.
And before we sign off, we want to formally acknowledge the foundational texts that inform the methodologies we discussed today. The principles of compounding marginal gains are deeply explored in James Clear's Atomic Habits, published in 2018.
Great read.
The framework of the build, measure, learn feedback loop and rapid iteration is central to Eric Ries's The Lean Startup from 2011. And the exploration of unintended consequences and interconnectivity draws heavily on Danella Meadows' seminal work, Thinking in Systems, from 2008. We highly recommend all three for a deeper understanding of these mechanics.
Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive. Go out there, interrogate your systems, look closely at your outcomes, and please always evaluate the cake before you serve it. See you next time.